But Joe, can Westerners grasp this kind of mystical, trans-theological experience? It does transcend theology. It leaves theology behind. I mean, if you're locked to the image of God in a culture where science determines your perceptions of reality, how can you experience this ultimate ground that the shamans talk about?
The best example I know in our literature is that beautiful book by John Neihardt called Black Elk Speaks.
Black Elk was?
Black Elk was a young Sioux, or Dakota as it's also called, a boy around 9 years old, before the American cavalry had encountered the Sioux. They were the great people of the plains. And this boy became sick, psychologically sick. His family, I'm telling the typical shaman story. The child begins to tremble and is immobilized, and the family is terribly concerned about it. And they send for a shaman who had had the experience in his own youth to come as a psychoanalyst, you might say, and pull the youngster out of him. But instead of relieving him of the deities, he is adapting him to the deities and the deities to himself, you might say. It's a different problem from that of psychoanalysis, where you remember, I think it was Nietzsche who said, be careful lest in casting out your devil you cast out the best thing that's in you. Here, the deities who have been encountered, the powers, let's call them, are retained. The connection is retained. It's not broken. And these men then become the spiritual advisors and gift givers of their people. Well, what happened with this young boy, he was about 9 years old, was he had a vision, and the vision is described, and it's a vision prophetic of the terrible future that his tribe was to have. But it also spoke of the possible positive aspects of it. It was a vision of what he called the hoop of his nation, realizing that it was one of many hoops, which is something that we haven't all learned well enough yet. And the cooperation of all the hoops of all the nations in grand processions and so forth. But more than that, it was an experience of himself as going through the realms of spiritual imagery that were of his culture and assimilating their import. And it comes to one great statement, which for me is a key statement to the understanding of myth and symbols. He says, I saw myself on the central mountain of the world, the highest place. And I had a vision, because I was seeing in a sacred manner, of the world. And the sacred central mountain was Harney Peak in South Dakota. And then he says, but the central mountain is everywhere. That is a real mythological realization.
Why?
It distinguishes between the local cult image, Harney Peak, and its connotation, the center of the world. The center of that of the world is the hub of the universe, Axis Mundi, you know, the central point, the pole star around which all revolves. The central point of the world is the point where stillness and movement are together. Movement is time, stillness is eternity, realizing the relationship of the temporal moment to the eternal, not moment, but forever, is the sense of life. Realizing how this moment in your life is actually a moment of eternity, and the experience of the eternal aspect of what you're doing in the temporal experience is the mythological experience, and he had it.
So
is the central mountain of the world Jerusalem, Rome, Benares, Lhasa, Mexico City, you know? Mexico City, Jerusalem, is symbolic of a spiritual principle as the center of the world.
So this little Indian was saying, there is a shining point where all lines intersect?
That's exactly what he said.
He was saying God has no circumference?
God is an intelligible sphere. That is to say, a sphere known to the mind, not to the senses, whose center is everywhere and circumference nowhere. And the center, Bill, is right where you're sitting. And the other one is right where I'm sitting. And each of us is a manifestation of that mystery.